It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Hello, good afternoon. Welcome in. Patrick Johnson Show with you here today on 94.3 The Game, 94.3thegame.com, and the IBX Media app. It is a Friday where the nice temperatures will continue. Big success last night, our concert on the Common with the one and only Craig Woolard and the Embers. And good to have Philip the Ref Pilkington back in the house today. Pilk did a great job out there yesterday, as did Joey Football, providing us a little bit of scene setting, pregame, pre-concert excitement. So Pilk, I'm gonna vow that we do this every time we have a concert on the Common if we're on the air. Let's do it.
Sounds good to me.
I thought that went really well. We kind of hit the high points and moved on. I thought it was good. So Pilk, your Panthers became a first round drafter last night. Leggett is the receiver out of South Carolina. Very productive, very speedy, good breakaway speed. Was tremendous this year for the Gamecocks. What do you think of what Carolina did last night, Pilkington?
I like Leggett. I think he's a solid player. The big knock I have on that pick, you can't blame anybody in the war room at the current time, but he is another version of Jonathan Mingo, and you just drafted Mingo last year, which proves to me they're just giving up on Jonathan Mingo, which, don't get me wrong, he was bad, but it's just right. Like saying, hey, you know what, we've made all these mistakes. Oh, and by the way, we made another one. Whereas, like, had they gone, say, corner in that situation or waited till tonight, because obviously New England was not trying to jump them for a corner and taking, you know, Kool-Aid McKinstry or someone like that, then you would not have as much, you know, like, we know we need a corner, but I was kind of hoping that they still had some hope for Mingo.
Have you ever, Pilkington, have you ever had lunch at this Dilworth place in Charlotte? Are you familiar with what I'm speaking to there?
I know where you're talking about, but no, I've not eaten there.
So last night, or yesterday, let me pull the story up here without audio blaring through the speakers of the cell phone here. They posted a sign. You know how they have you put the lettering up, you know, we've got cheeseburgers for, you know, two for $3, or, you know, whatever, to promote the wares at the restaurant.
And so what decade are you living in? Two cheeseburgers for $3?
Well, I'm just saying. I'm aware,
but Patrick, you're not even that old to remember when that happened. Come on, that's like Henry Hinton days.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe Buscemi days. Anyway, so on that marquee board outside of this popular eatery in Charlotte, the people put on there, let the coach coach and let the GM pick this year. So David Tepper stopped by the Dilworth Neighborhood Grill, right? After the employees of the restaurant put the sign up this week, and he reportedly stopped by and asked who was behind it Thursday, hours before the draft got underway. Can you imagine? Is he going to buy it and then demolish it? Is that what Tepper's going to do?
What a loser. This should be enough right now. The other owners should band together and realize this guy is not good for football and that he should be removed. What a jerk. I mean, really? You don't have thicker skin than that? You know, I'm going to say something that's fine down there. I'm going back to you, Patrick.
The manager told Tepper that the person who was responsible for the sign was not there at the time. The employee did say Tepper was pleasant about it, so there was that. Since purchasing the Panthers, I'm reading from the WBTV article, since purchasing the Panthers in 2018, there have been lots of talk about Tepper's involvement with the day-to-day operations. Many fans believe he has overstepped the boundaries, perhaps even interfering too much with roster decisions. Carolina has its head coach, its new head coach in 3 years and a new general manager. I guess that's saying maybe its third head coach is what we're trying to say there.
Yeah.
In 3 years. I mean, if you count the interims, it's more than that. Panthers will be on the clock tonight, second and third rounds. Across the two rounds, they hold currently the 39th, 65th picks overall. They have the 33rd pick, but sent that to Buffalo for the Leggett pick. I don't hate the pickup. I don't hate the fact that they were active shoppers. This was what happened last night on ESPN's coverage of the NFL draft when the Panthers made their pick.
With the 32nd pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Carolina Panthers select Xavier Leggett, wide receiver, South Carolina.
Xavier Leggett. That was with the trade. I guess it went from Kansas City to Buffalo. Buffalo sent the pick with the 200th overall pick to Carolina. And then the Panthers, using that in the final round of the first, final pick of the first round, Panthers also sent the 141st overall pick to the Bills in the trade. New England Patriots selecting North Carolina quarterback Drake May with the third overall pick in the draft. May says he's excited to get started.
I'm getting to see Gillette Stadium, and just looking forward to that. I think that's kind of what Coach Mayo preached. He's such a player's coach. I can see how all the guys can attract to him, and I look forward to playing for him and meeting everybody else.
So I guess as we told you a couple weeks ago, Belichick was on the coverage last night with help me, Pilk.
Your boy McAfee.
McAfee. How can I forget? Pat McAfee. And I guess he was sort of, his concern with May was his experience and that he's kind of quick to flee the pocket. I obviously didn't watch the McAfee. I actually found myself watching the Canes game a little bit last night, and which we'll have more on in a second. And watching a little bit of the NBA, of the basketball. I watched the Magic were just hammering Cleveland. So that one you looked up, it was like 80-46 in no time. And it was like, all right, I'm not going to watch this. The Miller Sixers defeated our guy, and Mark Miller, not Dr. No, Dan Miller. But Miller Sixers knocked off Joey Football's Knicks last night. Watched a little bit of that. It was kind of an exciting game. And watched bits and pieces of the high. I kind of forgot the draft was on, and I went back to the draft. So I didn't even think to watch the McAfee coverage with Belichick. But I think that would have been fascinating, Pilkey.
Probably would have been.
To hear Belichick's coverage, decisions on or thoughts on the decisions that were being made. I really do think that would have been a pretty fascinating deal.
It would have been, and I know we're going to get to the Canes in a second, but I do have one quick question since you're talking about your night last night. You always watch the Canes in the playoffs until they lose, so they're up 3-0.
Right.
If they do lose on Saturday, will you watch Game 5, or will you say they've lost one, I'm done, I'm out, I quit?
Night is Game 5.
Said what? What night?
Night would, if they were to lose, night would Game 5 be?
Let me look. Heck, I don't have our series memorized, much less theirs. Which is bad, but I got a lot going on. I'm traveling. Yeah.
R, you mean you're Boston Bruins.
I do. But I'll be traveling, so I got to look at the times once I get into a different time zone. Yeah.
Because game four of that series is to tomorrow.
Yep, and then Tuesday
night. So it's a weeknight?
Yeah, Tuesday night.
Okay,
I
might would watch it. There's a chance I'd watch it. If it's on the weeknight, especially those middle of the day weeknights, I'll probably watch it. I could see myself watching it. There's also some thought and some reporting prior to the draft last week. We talked to Joey Football about Julius, probably the most likely Pirate player to be drafted. It looks like that his, somewhere to Vegas would probably be what some out there are predicting, right? Day three, but Julius Wood, if there's a Pirate drafted, Julius Wood would seem to be the guy who would get drafted. Jeremy Lewis should get some kind of camp inviter, undrafted free agent deal. The baseball Pirates taking on Memphis this weekend in a three-game series in the American. Number 7 ECU, the game between the Pirates and the Tigers coming up at 7 tonight. 6:45 airtime with Scott Rogers on 94.3 The Game and the IBX Media app. It will be Treya Savage at 8-1 with a 192 earned run average, being opposed by right-hander David Warren for the Tigers, who is 4-2, and his ERA is 4.33. For tomorrow, I don't know if you caught this or not, Pilkington, but they have TBA listed as the starter. And that, of course, has been occupied by Zach Root all year. I guess Root, this is maybe, not saying that he's having any physical ailments, but this is maybe a rest situation for Zach Root, who has not been as sharp. Kind of what happened with you, Savage, if you'll remember, around this time last year. So you might see I don't know who you'll see in that. You may end up seeing Root, but I understand that maybe Root would be at least not going as of right now, or at least as of yesterday. The plan was for Root not to go on Saturday, just to, again, to maybe rest. Not saying there's anything wrong. And I'm not saying it's a dead arm because of fatigue, just, you know, he's kind of maybe hit the wall a little bit fatigue-wise.
Well, if you don't see Root, I think without seeing Wyatt Lunsford-Schenkman in the midweek, maybe that's a hint that we're getting Wyatt on Saturday. I don't know.
Like a Johnny Holstaff situation with him working two or three.
Yeah, I think they would love to get three out of him. He can throw that. Like I said, he didn't pitch on Tuesday. Norby threw a lot of pitches Tuesday. You'd like to get him and Norby in there, but Norby threw a lot Tuesday, so we'll see.
Norby threw a lot of pitches, you're right, Tuesday, and then worked a couple days last weekend. Of course, he's had – but Norby worked spanning over four innings on Tuesday. But it was Tuesday, and you would think he would – I think the plan would be to bring Norby in some way on Sunday, because Sunday's also listed as TBA. Bottom line is, out of your Savage tonight, you need a huge evening. You need another extended vintage outing.
You need 7 innings and a mercy rule, and you don't use anybody else. Yeah.
We played Parker Byrd's interview in its entirety from ABC's GMA3 yesterday, and we've got the video posted on 94.3 The Game's social media. And I just wanted to play a clip of this. I thought this was especially poignant. Parker talking about in the aftermath of the boating accident, his leg being amputated, what has allowed him to persevere. And he talked about his faith.
Believing in him that his plan's bigger than ours. And it's hard to see that when you're going through it. But on the outside of it now, everything works out for good.
I went back and watched that this morning again. And Parker, for someone, again, who wasn't, you know, a real excited public speaker before all this. I mean, he was on national television yesterday and was awesome. I mean, just tremendous. And again, I thought the two hosts for ABC did a great job. I don't know who produced that, but that producer did a hell of a job getting the hosts prepped. And the one host, I think, was motivated to meet Parker, as you heard him say yesterday. And when you're engaged a little more into the interview subject or the subject at hand, you are a little more, you know, into it. Even though you try to be into everything, it's certain things you're a little more into. Your Carolina Hurricanes, we're going to talk to Brian LeBlanc from Canes Country about this coming up. Your Carolina Hurricanes, as we talked about, are a win away from advancing to the second round of Stanley Cup playoffs. Carolina edged the Islanders on the island last night, 3-2. In Game 3, Brett Burns and Dmitry Orlov netted first-period goals. Hurricanes coach Rod Brind'Amour talked about the goaltender Frederik Andersen. Says he was stellar.
Very, very sharp, and obviously the difference in the game. That's kind of his demeanor, you know. You can never really tell with him what kind of game it is if you just watch him, and that's clearly big in these type of game.
He had a magical evening last night. He made a great save in the first. I mean, it was a rebound puck situation, and the Islander player was there, and he just made a great glove save. It was so good. I didn't really watch a lot past the first period. I kind of got involved in those other things I mentioned at that point and then went to bed fairly early. Carolina now leads the best of seven series, 3-0. Game four taking place in Elmont Saturday. All right, Pilk, anything that you want to mention before we hit the break here and welcome Jim Zocchi in to talk the Panthers and congratulate Jim on being renewed as the play-by-play voice for Pirate football for the ECU Sports Network. Anything that you have, Mr. Pilkington?
A lot more draft stuff, but I think we're going to get into a lot of that with Zocchi because six quarterbacks taking the first 12 picks. It's always intriguing, but
yeah,
I think we're saving that.
How many of those do you think are going to be stars in the NFL out of the six?
Law of average says about two.
That's about right. And stars of maybe various degrees. All right, a timeout. Patrick Johnson Show, Pirate Baseball tonight at Memphis at 7, game one of the best, game one of the 3-game series. Jim Zocchi talking with us when we come back on the Patrick Johnson Show.
We have you covered with all the ECU news and beyond that you need for the drive home. The Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Boy, I'm just reading some of this listener mail. Patrick at IBXmedia.com. You can always email me there. Wow. I think, Pilk, sometimes my satire, my satirical kind of smart-alecky attitude is perhaps lost on people.
That's maybe what makes you and I a good team. We're both that way, and we're so mean to each other. It makes it funny.
I don't agree with that at all. I'm not mean to you.
Oh, we pretend to be mean to each other on air. We're both smart out.
I don't ever. Oh, I mean, I really do think you're a sports nerd.
No, I know, but I'm just saying the smart aleckiness is part of our on air act. It's fun.
I'm really this grumpy. I mean, that's not shtick.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Jim Zocchi joins us, ECU Sports Network, Panthers Radio Network. Jim, I've been described as pissy. I don't know if that's an appropriate description, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see. It's Friday, so we just say whatever we want. Good day to you, Jim Zocchi. All right, Jim Zocchi is with us, ladies and gentlemen, on the Patrick Johnson Show. Zoe, congrats on being back for ECU football next year. That's something I know you're very excited about. We're very excited about it too.
Yeah, no, it's great. And looking forward to, obviously, well documented, all the changes with the coaching staff and the transfer portal and the players and all that. So it's I'm excited about the new outlook for this season. Of course, we're all down there for the spring game. I had the chance to come down couple weeks prior to catch a couple practices and talk with the coaches and so forth. So I bet there's an energy and an excitement about it this year, and to get back to where Pirate football needs to be, I think they're on the right track, and it should be a great year.
Before we get into some of the things in the draft last night, and I know you can only say so many things here, Jim, but my question to you at this point would be, as someone who lives and works and plays in Charlotte, have you and others that work for the franchise been banned from eating at the Dilworth Neighborhood Grill? That's all I'm wondering.
It's funny you said that, because that's actually long-time staple in Charlotte. I have fantasy football drafts that are annually held there that we do with the other writers and broadcasters. We've got a four-person league, okay. And that is our home base for fantasy football drafts every year. And they've had some construction project that's been going on in front of it on Moorhead Street longer than it should be. And they had funny signs out about that on the little marquee out front and all this and that. So I know we're going with the Dave Tepper thing, but I thought it was, it's kind of par for the course. It's kind of just become like a Charlotte thing is what will be written in front of the Dilworth Neighborhood Grill on the marquee when you're driving by on a different day.
If I were to ever go back to Charlotte, which I shouldn't say I, well, no, I always try to stay outside of Charlotte if I'm passing through and have to stay there. But if I were to go back to Charlotte for any reason, Jim, and I go to Dilworth Neighborhood Grill, what's the go-to item? You know, as someone who likes to sample local cuisine whenever I go anywhere, what would be the go-to item at the Dilworth Neighborhood Grill?
Their thing is, it's kind of got a northern influence. It's like north, as in like Buffalo, New York. They have these speedy sandwiches. They have this chicken speedy is what it's called and so forth. And everything involves lots of cheese. So it's they have great flatbread pizzas and then sandwiches that are kind of made out of a lot of the many same ingredients there. So I would go either with one of the pizzas or with one of the speedy sandwiches.
Okay. As I write this down, make sure I, if I'm lactose intolerant. Okay. Very good. All right. Jim Szoke.
Yeah. You might want to go salad at that point if you're lactose intolerant.
Szoke, it's always great to talk to you. And it's been a minute, too long. Panthers, were active in the first round last night. I kind of like to see that. Do you like, the pick of, Xavier Leggett? Pilkington says it's kind of what, like the guy they drafted last year, but I think Leggett's got, he was productive at South Carolina. I know that.
No, he's a good football player. They'd, in the pre-draft been talking about him and someone they probably could have got in the second round. The reason they trade up one spot is they get the fifth year contract option with him there. So it actually was a smart move from that standpoint. If he pans out, to be the player they think he's going to be. And yeah, there is a history of, them picking guys second, third round that don't pan out at that position, at least long-term wise. But he comes in off a really productive season, over 1,200 yards, 71 catches for the Gamecocks, 7 touchdowns. But brings size at 6'1", 220, and at that size ran a sub 4'4", 4'3", 9. So I think he's exactly what they need because they've got their two best receivers on kind of short deals. Adam Thielen was really good last year, but he's 34 years old. And Deontay Johnson will come in and be obviously a big part of the passing game coming in from Pittsburgh, but he's on the last of a one-year deal left on his current contract, so I don't know what his future is beyond that here. So this is important that he hits, that this is the guy they can build around as being the future at wide receiver. And Jonathan Mingo didn't have much production last year, but hopefully with the new coaching staff and second year of Bryce Young, that Mingo steps up and gets more active in the offense this year.
All right, Jim. Longtime listeners to this fine radio product, you know, we've been on the air here 71 years with the Patrick Johnson Show. And
wow, congratulations.
Longtime listeners, yes, thank you. Longtime listeners will remember that one-time producer Ben B. Baby Byron would often ask you questions.
Yes.
Philip the Ref Pilkington, much like Ben B. Baby Byron, is a crazy Panthers fan. Now, I think been driven crazy for sure. I think Pilk is a little different in his approach, but I think it's wise to let you answer some Pilkington questions because he's a very weedy, in the weeds guy. And since it's Friday, I'm painting with even more broad strokes than I normally would. So here is Philip the Ref Pilkington with some real specific Panthers draft questions for you. Pilk?
Well, thank you, Patrick. So my big question, I guess, Jim, was, you know, I think this kid's going to be a good player that we took, but is this them giving up, you think, on Jonathan Mingo? Because I think he's more talented than Mingo, but style-wise, very much the same type of player. And I don't know. Is this them kind of saying, hey, after 1 year, it was a bad year, you're done?
All right, before you answer that, Jim, hang on, Jim. Before you answer that, Pilkington said we, as if he were in the war room. That's the level of crazy he is about the Panthers. All right, go ahead, Jim. Have the Panthers given up on Mingo is the question. Jim Szoke, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, we accept that from Phil because he also is a person that is willing to come into Charlotte and visit with family. So I know he actually makes his way into Charlotte proper at times during the course of the year. But I think it's a great question. Yes, you know, unlike some other people on the show. And so, to me, it is a little bit of a duplication of what they thought they were getting with Mingo. But when you're 2-15 and you need weapons to go more long-term than what they have currently on their roster with a young quarterback, I don't think you can do wrong with getting a guy of this ability. I think he's a little bit bigger and a little bit faster than what Mingo even brings. So an upgrade, if you will. and you can never have enough depth. I mean, the good NFL teams go four deep at wide receiver. So there's going to be a place where I think Jonathan Mingo and his offense too. But them being new, I don't think to this point at all. All they've had so far is a couple voluntary workout sessions. I don't think they're at a point beyond looking at film where they've like given up and decided on a young player like that not having a place. I think their hope is that he grows and does find himself a solid role in this offense. Does take a lot of pressure off of him, though, not to be like a lead guy, at least this season anyways.
You want me to go again? Oh, of course I do.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So, you know, we got 39th pick, 7th pick of tonight's, you know, round.
Second round.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. It's early. I'm still trying to wake up here. Is corner, you think the way they're going here? I mean, there's a couple guys that were projected first round corners. Not saying they're going to be there at 39, but there's, you know, more opportunities to move up. Not that we have much draft capital, but you would hope they would, you know, make a good pick here. McKinstry's still on the board. Where do you think they're going with this next pick?
If I had to project a position, I think corner would probably be the most likely if they were going by that. They'll have a 7th pick tonight. And I think McKinstry may or may not be there, honestly, at number 7 of the second round tonight. But I would love if he were. Another one to keep an eye out for is Ennis Raystraw of Missouri. I think he would be a guy that might be available at that spot. When you're, again, a team that's struggling, they addressed interior guard in free agency. There's no running backs you would take at this point. I think they might grab one later in the draft. I don't think there's a tight end to grab at this spot. It very likely could be a defensive player, and they could use help at all three levels on defense. So even going linebacker or going another edge rusher, I think would be another way to go. I don't know who projects at that point. That would be, you know, somebody that would be worthy of going early second round, but they also have the first pick of the third round. So it's kind of coupling those two picks together, maybe an edge rusher with the loss of Brian Burns. Again, we have Jadeveon Clowney, but he's got a 2-year contract. He's 31 years old. So I think there's a couple different ways that can go on defense. You can never have enough good linebackers. You know, losing Frankie Louvu to Washington this offseason, they've done some replacing in free agency. You know, there's been some talk about even somebody like Peyton Wilson from NC State coming in, who's projected as going at some point in the second round. Would that be just a good football player to grab and have with that pick in the second round? Be interesting to see. Because also Shaq Thompson coming off of injury, getting later in his career, you also kind of look at that succession plan about, you know, who the next group of linebackers is going to be for the team.
All right, Jim, out of the 6 quarterbacks that were taken in the half dozen first picks, who, which 1, 2, multiple do you think truly have star potential?
Well, I think, you know, any of the first 3 for sure. That was kind of like the first jumping off point. Some say the first 2. Some say just Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. Drake May, I think he's got a future. Not everyone's going to be a finished product when they leave college and come to pro football. And it used to always be just known that's the case. And there's things mechanic-wise, footwork-wise, that he needs to work on. And we actually had his high school coach, John Scott Chadwick, from when he was the coach at Myers Park. He's up as a fight in high school up in your area. And so he spoke about, you know, the fact that Drake's got all he needs in terms of all the tools, just needs some time. And I think going to New England, they're kind of doing a reset in New England, probably a really good landing spot for him. So probably not right away. He may not even be the starter right away, so that might be more of a slower growth. But I think, you know, Williams and Daniels will jump in immediately, have to have that happen there. I thought it was a really, I would say, oddball pick by Atlanta to get Michael Penix Jr. when you just spent heavily on bringing in Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins says to me, this is win now. He's got these skill position players around him, and that they just went for it at quarterback. I thought it was a bizarre pick to go at number 8 with a guy who's a little iffy and also your backup quarterback. And from all accounts, Kirk Cousins was told 10 seconds before it happened that it was happening there, and he's a little put off by that. So I thought that was an odd pick. It's almost like when Aaron Rodgers was with Green Bay, they took Jordan Love. You think, well, you got this guy in the prime of his career. Shouldn't you surround him, whether it's on defense or whatever, with the best opportunity to make the playoffs and win games? So I thought for where they were in the state of their franchise, that was an odd pick. Why not wait another year at least before you worry about who your backup quarterback is going to be?
Yeah. Scott Chadwick's an awesome guy, by the way. Yeah. One of the best. Yeah. Really is. Good dude. All right, Jim. It looks like out of Julius Wood would probably be a day 3 pick. It appears. Is there anywhere you think his skill set could land him? I know when you get to that day 3, it's, you know, it comes down to best availability and you know, that kind of thing. And who knows who's picking where at that point. But where are you the league well enough to know where would a guy like Julius Wood fit in and maybe have a shot to latch on?
And that's harder to project as far as a team, but in terms of what you're hearing, it sounds like what I'm hearing, like maybe a sixth or seventh round pick from just even being out of ECU and what the coaches were hearing after his pro day and all that, that he's going to come in at the day three, sixth, seventh round pick. The thought there is your immediate help is going to be as depth at, say, the safety position, special teams, and obviously that with him as well. And we know what a hard hitter he is and how much of a extra burden he took on last year with some of the losses in season. Last year in the defensive secondary that he had to take on covering so much of the field. So I think that ended up working out well for him to kind of show what he could do and not doing maybe some of the natural position things that he would have done if they had a more healthy roster in the secondary last year with the Pirates. So, yeah, I think for him, just landing at a spot that needs safety depth and being a special teams guy, that's going to be what he's going to want to do his first year in the league. I hope he gets drafted. And sometimes it's nice to get to pick your own team if you don't get drafted, so it's not the end of the world if it doesn't happen. But if he does, teams always say it doesn't matter. But when you spend capital on draft picks, you want those guys to make your roster. So I think worst-case projection from him is he's either drafted or undrafted, but he'll be on at least a practice squad somewhere in the NFL next year collecting a paycheck and hopefully on an active roster.
He's got the measurables and plays so hard, you know he will. And then hopefully Jeremy Lewis will wind up in a good situation where he'll have a shot too, just because he's such a great kid. Hey, Jim, great to talk to you. We'll catch up with you, I'm sure, at some point over the next few weeks at times. And always nice to talk to you, my friend. And again, congratulations on coming back for Pirate football again next season.
Appreciate you. Thank you, Patrick and Philip. Have a great weekend.
All right, there he goes, the great Jim Szoke, Panthers Radio Network and ECU Sports Network for Pirate football. Let's have Philip the Ref Pilkington come in, and he's going to give us an update, Pirate Report. Got ECU baseball tonight, and then Brian LeBlanc from Canes Country, our old friend, will talk, as we do about this time of year with him, some playoff hockey involving your, and at least for now, my Carolina Hurricanes. Pilk?
Well, Patrick, we'll see how much longer they're your Carolina Hurricanes, but you know, that's how it goes every year. It's the running joke. So Pirate baseball will be back in action tonight. They'll travel up to Memphis. They've been hitting the ball really well lately. Coach Godwin praised his hitting coaches.
And they got really good hitting coaches, and Henry Lartigue and Bront Packard, and those guys work really hard, and they put a plan together. Our guys, for the most part, execute it at a high level, but they're super coachable, and they care about one another. And like I said, Henry and Pack put together a really good plan.
Network coverage will start at 6:45 for that just after 7 o'clock first pitch right here on 94.3 The Game. You can hear it all weekend long here on our station. Also, the softball team will travel to Memphis as well for their weekend series as they try and build off a huge midweek victory in Chapel Hill. Last night, once many of you were already in the bed, including our very own Patrick Johnson, the Panthers traded up into the first round to take wide receiver Xavier Leggett. Out of South Carolina, they traded up only one spot with the Detroit Lions. And this was that was only minor news in a historic NFL draft, which had six quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks, the quickest that six quarterbacks had ever been taken, and only the second time six had been taken in the first round. You'd have to go all the way back to 1983 when Elway, Kelly, and Marino were taken, as well as three others. And 23 offensive players were taken in the first round of the draft. That is the most all-time. The first defensive player went 15th in the draft. That is the latest for the first ever defensive player. And last night, the Carolina Hurricanes defeated the New York Islanders to take a 3-0 series lead. They will try and wrap it up tomorrow at 2 o'clock in New York. That'll do it for your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. On the other side of this timeout, we will talk more about those Carolina Hurricanes with Brian LeBlanc.
Have you noticed he's in his own little happy hour?
We're back to the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
This is the happy hour program.
Here's the P-Man.
All righty. Let's welcome in our old friend Brian LeBlanc from CanesCountry.com. Oh, look at that guy right there joining us on the video feed now. LeBlanc, talking some Canes hockey. How are you, buddy?
Always a pleasure to See your smiling face. I don't know if I've ever done radio live on video before. This is all new to me.
We're like the big time shows, except in budget, and except in the talent of the host. But other than that, we're like all the big time shows.
Don't sell yourself short here. I mean, only the finest in radio and now streaming video quality for the great P-Man. I expect nothing less.
Well, we've been doing it for about a year. We're enjoying it. All right.
Mm-hmm.
LeBlanc, yeah. great to talk to you. I'm firmly on the bandwagon with your and my Carolina Hurricanes.
How long? About 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes? Might be a little while.
It started with game one of the series, and now when they lose, okay. I'm off the bandwagon. I'm totally off the bandwagon when they lose.
Well, we're doing well then. Okay.
Okay. I watched a whole period last night of hockey, for the game in Long Island, and I had to go to sleep. But I was really impressed that the forwards score early, right?
Mm-hmm.
They get on the board. That's a good thing. And let me just say this about Brent Burns. Veteran guy over like 110, 112 games in his playoff career. He's a vibe, man. That guy's just that's the kind of guy you wish you was your neighbor. Because he'd always have a story for you, I think.
Except he's the kind of guy that, like, he doesn't want anyone as his neighbor. Because he wants to live on, like, 300 acres of land by himself. Like, he's the kind of guy that would buy like half of Pamlico County. Like, that's Frankfurt. just give him a ranch and he's happy. I find it hysterical that everybody talks about Brent Burns like he's Methuselah. I mean, in hockey terms he is, but he's, to appropriate the phrase of a friend of both of ours, he's literally the age of my brother. Quite literally. he's going to be 40 years old next year. And yeah. I mean, we're both beyond that. And neither of us think that, you know, we're exactly pushing up daisies here. And yet everybody looks at him and goes, just, you know, oh my God, he's got one foot in the grave. And it's astounding just to see how well he performs. And and when the Hurricanes traded for him a couple of years ago, the thought was that, you know, they were just kind of buying themselves some time. And, you know, he's kind of a patchwork job until some of these younger defensemen are ready to go. And he has been everything they could have possibly expected and more. He's just been an incredible addition, has really fit in seamlessly next to Jacob Slavin, who has been, you know, at the top of his game for years now with the Hurricanes. And it's really a testament to just how well he's kept himself in shape, how well he's been able to, you know, refine his game and just keep his conditioning up at this age. I mean, you know, jokes aside about his age, there's a lot of mileage on those tires. And, you know, for all that we joke about how we're getting up there in years, neither of us are playing high-level professional sports on a regular basis. And that takes a lot out of you, needless to say. And it's saying something that he's up there. And there's not one guy in the locker room, I think, that these guys want to win a Stanley Cup for more than Brent Burns. There's a lot of people that are really cheering for him, I think.
We're talking hockey, as we do, as we're wont to do this time of year, when I'm on the Carolina Hurricanes bandwagon, as I am now, because they're in the playoffs and they're up 3-0 over the Islanders with game 4 tomorrow night. Frederik Andersen, or is it Frederik Andersen? Mm-hmm. Frederik, as we would say back home, Frederik. Frederik Andersen was superb last night.
Frederik Andersen, man. The Down East is coming out in you today, P-Man, let me tell you.
That glove save off that rebound.
One in the first or one in the third? Were you in bed by the one in the third?
Oh, I was in bed by the one in the third. I'm talking about the one in the first. Was awesome. And I've seen the still photo of the one where he contorts himself in the third.
Yeah.
But obviously he was the difference last night and can be a difference maker in this run, I have to imagine.
Yeah, and this is why they got him, and this is why they're not given to making excuses, and you're not going to hear them make excuses. And I think it's not in the DNA of Rod Brind'Amour to make excuses, but there's definitely an undercurrent of, if Freddie Andersen had been healthy the past 2 years, would the Hurricanes have gone deeper in the playoffs? And I think the answer probably is yes on present evidence. And I think it's probably saying something that the Hurricanes were able to keep up as well as they were with Andersen being out for as long as he was this season. The Hurricanes obviously have trust in Andersen. He obviously is a high level goaltender, the likes of which they really haven't had in many, many years. Even going back all the way to 2006, I think it's fair to say it's been a long, long time since the Hurricanes have had that caliber of a goaltender ready to go out there every night. I've seen some rumblings, and it wouldn't surprise me maybe if they put in Pyotr Kochetkov tomorrow in game four. At this point, they really don't have anything to lose. And the Hurricanes have done really well with this goaltending rotation for a few years running now. And what you don't want to do is you don't want Andersen to get burned out. And, you've got Kochetkov on the bench. He's played well this year. I think you probably want to get him some runs so he doesn't get rusty in case you do need him at some point, because Andersen, for as well as he's played, doesn't have the greatest track record of staying healthy. And you don't want to throw Kochetkov in there, totally cold. So I think you probably do want to get him some play, especially if this winds up being a sweep and you're looking at almost a week off, before the start of the next series, with, on the other side of the bracket, the Caps and the Rangers are, that could very well be a short series too. So they may not be that much time off, but, you're looking at, if this winds up being a sweep, you're looking at least 4 or 5 days off. So it wouldn't surprise me if they start Kochetkov tomorrow. Probably, if that's a loss, they go back to Andersen for game five on Monday. But either way, I think it's telling just how effective the Hurricanes have been with Freddie Andersen in net. I think he's the unquestioned number one starter at this point, and they're going to go probably as deep in the playoffs as Frederick Andersen takes them.
And here's what they do stand to lose tomorrow if they start this other guy, and not my guy, Frederick Andersen. They stand to lose me because I will be off the bandwagon. SB Nation, Canes Country, Brian LeBlanc with us here. All right. I will come back to my Carolina Hurricanes in just a moment. The NHL this past season had record revenue generated. Ticket sales were 97% capacity. I think the league only will see more success by moving a team to Salt Lake City out of Phoenix. I think it's going to do very, very well there. How healthy is this league right now?
Overall, I think it's pretty healthy. I mean, they certainly don't have the issues that baseball has, with the situation in Oakland and the stadium situation in Tampa. Those are two things that really need to get settled before they can expand. The NHL is making noise. There's noise being made about them possibly expanding again in the next maybe 4 or 5 years, something like that. They're shaking the tree again, possibly in Atlanta, which would be now the third time that they would theoretically go back to Atlanta. But they've kind of, whether it's intentional or not, I think that pro sports has kind of hit on the right way to do this now, following what the Braves did when they moved into Cobb County about 5 or 6 years ago. And that seems to be the pattern that especially the NHL looks like they're trying to follow, because if they go to Atlanta, that's what they're looking at doing. Seattle has been a hit. Vegas has been a gigantic hit for the league. Obviously, winning the Stanley Cup goes a long way, but they were, going to the Stanley Cup final their first year in the league might have been even bigger for that than actually winning the thing last year was. I think they're in a good spot now, and getting out of that situation in Arizona really kind of put to bed the one major black cloud that was kind of hanging over the league. There's still some questions about Winnipeg. There's always going to be questions about Winnipeg. It's always going to be a shaky market. Winnipeg was kind of an escape sheet for the league where they needed to get out of Atlanta in 2011. There was no question about that. The arena wasn't working. The ownership was dysfunctional. That was just it was a disaster waiting to happen. They waited as long as they could in Phoenix, and it just was not going to work. Maybe the owner there, and this was kind of a Cleveland Browns situation. If you remember back in the late 90s when the original Browns moved to Baltimore and they kept the history of the team and reactivated them in Cleveland in 1999, that's kind of the template for what they did with the Coyotes. They said, okay, the owner has the right to reactivate the franchise within 5 years if you can get an arena built. The scuttlebutt is that seems more not likely than likely.
Right. I don't think it's going to happen.
But the league loves the Phoenix market. You can't really blame them. It's the same reason that they want two teams in Florida, frankly. I mean, there are a lot of snowbirds that go down there and want to watch their teams when they're down there in January and February when they come through town. And it's a gigantic market. It's, a top 10 market. So you can understand why they want to put a team there. They just want to make sure that it's got the right ownership and the right building, which over the last 25 years just has not happened there for whatever reason. So, they do that right. I think eventually they will get there. Gary Bettman wants to be there.
Right.
It just wasn't anymore. But overall, I think they are in a good place. I think there's a lot less uncertainty there now that situation has to an extent been resolved. And obviously the owners of the Jazz, who have now bought what was the Coyotes and moved them to Salt Lake City, they're in a pretty good spot right now, I think.
All right. Got less than a minute left in the show. I just need a one-word answer. Do the Canes win tomorrow and get the sweep and I stay on the bandwagon?
Yes, they do. You're on the bandwagon for another one.
Excellent. All right, Brian LeBlanc, we'll talk to you again during the playoff run. Thanks.
You got it. Talk to you soon.
All right, there he goes, Brian LeBlanc from Canes Country. Thanks to him. Thanks to Jim Zocchi today. Thanks to Philip the Ref Pilkington. Back Monday with Cliff Godwin and Steven Igo. And I think T-Bone from Charlotte is going to join us, FNZ, to talk to him about the Panthers draft and some other news going on in the Charlotte market. Hey, have a great and safe weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday morning on Talk of the Town and then back here in the afternoon for the Patrick Johnson Show, mid-morning, for that interview with Coach Godwin. Have a great weekend, everybody.